Hello and welcome to edition 288 of the NRF1 podcast, because Norfolk knows Formula 1. This is your F1 podcast straight out of Norfolk, UK, and we are here today to bring you all the latest talking points and opinions following the Saudi Arabian Grand Prix. I am Richard Baxter. Joining me tonight we have Norfolk's own Italian, Alessandro Essefumagalli, or Alex to us.
Ciao, everybody.
Here he is. He's back again. It's been a while.
Indeed.
But no better time to join us. Also joining us, fresh from Miami, is motoring journalist David Sillier.
Good evening. How's it going?
Good. Yeah, I say David Sillier, you're DT to us as well, so we'll stick to the short names.
I'm happy with DT. It works for me.
Awesome. So there's so much to talk about it, so I think we might as well jump straight in. And I have to say, we're going to wrap up the two Arabian Grand Prix in one, so we're going to talk about Qatar in this as well. But I mean, there's so much that happened in Saudi that I think we'll wrap up Qatar pretty quickly. So I think it's fair to say, straightforward, Hamilton won, Verstappen was second, closed the gap up a bit in the driver's standings. There were several tyre failures in the race because the track was quite brutal in terms of that. So I think that shows why it's expected when it's hosted in Qatar in a few years, it's probably going to be a different venue. And Alonso, he showed his class, he returned to the podium. Which was great to see. I don't know, either of you got anything you want to quickly mention on Qatar? Quick thoughts?
The only thing, I believe I've heard that the thoughts for the new circuit are about downtown Qatar. That obviously, it will be definitely be into a different location. But I'm thinking about downtown, which is a bit more of a street circuit for what I gather. Which, yeah.
Cool, another street circuit, so that doesn't surprise me too much.
Might be fun, yeah, but hopefully we'll give it something different than the early one.
Yeah. DT, anything to add?
Yeah. It's hard to say. Qatar feels like so long ago. I know I've been on holiday in between, and it's been a hectic few weeks for me, but it just, I don't know, with everything that went on yesterday, as in the race we've just had, and Qatar, it feels like it was such an age away. But yeah, I remember it being a good race. I quite enjoyed the track. I enjoyed, obviously, the fact that Alonso got back on the podium. That's always good to see, and he's a firm favourite of many fans. So it was always nice to see him back and enjoying F1, enjoying life. I think he's been enjoying F1 since he's been back, but you know, obviously that was a really good moment for him. And I thought it was a commanding victory by Hamilton, at least from what I can remember.
Yeah, I think I'd agree with all those points, and good to see Alonso back up there, making his return worthwhile. Jeez, I really rap-godded that one. Right, I think we might as well jump straight into the deep end here, Saudi Arabia. Now, we'll start at the beginning, because that's usually the best place. So it was a brand new circuit, a street circuit, high speeds, close walls, blind corners. What were your thoughts on the circuit, Alex? What were your first opinions about it?
No, I'm not a big fan. It seemed to me very boring. I know the speed and everything, and you know what could have been the show. But to me, it was very boring as a track, as a very straight, very dangerous, and we've seen that in two different races. It was very dangerous. I don't enjoy seeing tracks like that. I like to see a bit more of Austria or stuff like that. It's just, you know, different type of curves, and if you want to have a speed, at least, you know, introduce speed different than just driving straight, you know, on end. I don't really like that myself.
Yeah. DT, what about you? What are your thoughts on the circuit?
I liked it more than I thought I would. When I first sort of had a got to grips with the layout and the way it was going to be laid out, I thought this is going to be fast but probably quite boring. It was a little bit more, it felt like almost like a really fast Monaco in places, and I like some of the sections. I like the fact that it's a bit of a challenge for the drivers, but I can't say that I'm massively excited to go back there either. No, I wouldn't necessarily pick this track over another street circuit. So, yeah, I sort of mixed feelings on it. I would like to see it maybe have an improvement from a safety point of view. I don't think it's like overly dangerous, but maybe just I think they've hopefully learned some lessons from this one and maybe make some changes.
Yeah, definitely. I think there's a few moments across the weekend where I thought it just seemed like the circuit was almost designed to kill someone. The way that in qualifying, I mean, there's other complications there, not just the design, but the way that in qualifying we had cars who would slow down at certain points of the track, and then teams weren't doing their jobs to warn, and drivers weren't looking in the mirrors because they're on a slow lap or whatever, and a car comes around a blind corner going somewhere around 150 miles an hour and suddenly there's just a car in front of them. It was, some of the onboards were terrifying. It's great to see cars, you know, at high speed on the limit, but some of those the shots, I mean the jumping head into the race, there was a crash for Nikita Mazepin that was scary, really. And I think like you say, there's some lessons that can be learnt there.
Yeah, I think what we've got to remember is that we go to a lot of more traditional tracks that also have some incredibly scary and dangerous crashes. I mean, just look at Spa earlier this year with Lando and stuff. So, you know, we don't ever really talk too much about Spa being that dangerous. So I think it's because it's new, it's a talking point. And I think there are things that can be done to improve it. I would like to see it maybe slowed down in places, make it more of a proper street circuit. You know, the benefit of a street circuit is that it's a bit slow, a bit more technical. But yeah, I think it's a difficult one because I think a lot of circuits are quote unquote dangerous. Mm. I just don't think this one is interesting enough to offset that sort of risk, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. No, that makes sense. And I think a lot of the drivers had said about in previous years, basically, about they want to go to a circuit where if you run wide, you're punished. It's not just, oh, here's a mile of tarmac you can run off. You know, you're punished for running wide and it pays. Now, on Saturday in the qualifying, we really saw that, of course, with Verstappen on the very last lap in qualifying. The final corner locked up, ran wide, tried to get away with it and hit that wall. And the track got him back, didn't it? It made him pay.
Yeah, very much so. And that's kind of what I like to see from these street circuits is that, yes, that there is that risk. And if you overstep the mark, then you're going to pay for it. And, you know, Verstappen clearly was on one hell of a lap and really, really flying. But, you know, he just made that little mistake and it cost him dearly. And I think that makes it more interesting to watch, especially from a qualifying point of view. Maybe not so much the race, but definitely from a qualifying point of view when they're really on the limit. You know, they're trying to extract the maximum performance and, they, you know, watching the best of the best, you know, really extract an inch perfect. And I think the start of that lap was a perfect example. Like, how close was he? Was it corner one or corner two? I can't remember where he came very, very wide and almost touched the barrier, but it was inch perfect. And that, you know, that's exciting to watch. So, you know, I think it's definitely got its pros. I think there is, like I say, just I would like to see maybe a little bit more technical section, maybe in it. I don't know.
Can I raise a question, Rich? Though, because I think obviously we are going into a lot of street circus these days, but isn't it a car for already also for next year even bigger than this car? I think that was smaller.
I think it's supposed to be a bit smaller because it's not got so many aero bits, but.
Yeah, because my thought was like, obviously, we're moving away from, you know, from all this. We're moving into a lot of those street circuits, which automatically they become a little bit tighter, you know, a lot more technical than actually about speed. Because if I, you know, think about myself, like, a few years ago, I remember there were talks about Imola not being good track to race at because, obviously, some of the walls were literally right next to the track. And it was like, well,
you know, if you think about it, now obviously we've got Monaco, we've got Azerbaijan, we've got obviously Jeddah, we're going into Miami next year, I believe, or the year after. So it's, you know, it's just starting to become a lot more of a street circus, but the cost has just been getting bigger.
Mm.
And to me, that just takes away from the show. It just, you know, it doesn't really, it doesn't allow a lot of overtakes. It doesn't, I don't know, to me, just that seems to be, you know, you're trying to make it better for the viewers, a little bit more technical about actually about the driver, not just about the car, but then you get, you're making it worse elsewhere. I don't know, that's something, it could be, you know, people at home, you could write us in and tell us about what their thoughts are as well.
Yeah, definitely. It's yeah. A good point. Definitely a good point.
Yeah, I know exactly where you're coming from. I think if we have more than maybe like a quarter of the season on street circuits, I think that would be too much. As long as they keep it below, you know, a relatively small percentage of the overall season, I still think we have enough races. I mean, we have a lot of races now. So I think, you know, adding in a few extra street circuits is not a bad thing, depending on, and as long as they're not all the same, you know, they can't all be Monaco, you know, so as long as they've got some variations and some differences. And I like the idea of, you know, the more interesting backdrop. So, you know, we're used to lots of circuits in the countryside with lots of open spaces and stuff. Sometimes it's quite nice to see these different sort of bits of the world up close. And so, yeah, so I think they definitely have their place.
Yeah. And I think that's a good point as well, the amount of street circuits, because there is a lot coming in and coming through Formula One right now. And it kind of makes them feel less special. I mean, we haven't been to Singapore this year or last year, obviously, because of COVID. You kind of ask the question, will we go back there because we've got other places? It's kind of like a night race, isn't it? You know, we went to Singapore, and that was the first night race. And then in the end, we had places like Bahrain do it, and Abu Dhabi have done it. And now we've got Saudi and Qatar who have done the same thing. It makes total sense, by the way, but it just kind of makes it feel less special about one race. But hey, you know, we'll see what the plans are, and you never know, maybe we'll have some new thing come in, a new circuit. So
yeah, and Singapore is an interesting race, I think, to me, but it's, for what I know, I got some of my colleagues on the Singapore side, they say that a lot of people in Singapore don't actually like having Formula One. Obviously Singapore is a tiny country and it gets basically completely in lockdown because of the Formula One for a few days, which is obviously not ideal. But yeah, I think Singapore is a good track because a bit of everything. It's a tight in places, but it's got actually, you know, some good run area for drivers, you know, overtakes and stuff like that. So, but yeah, it'll be interesting.
Yeah, definitely.
Hello everyone, this is Jake Humphrey here. You're listening to the best Formula One podcast from the best county in the world, the NRF1 podcast. And I wasn't paid any money to say that.
No, I did give you some beers.
Now, getting really stuck into Saudi, there's hell of a lot to go through, so we might as well go through the laps. Race start wasn't that exciting, pretty much as you were. Hamilton, Bottas, Verstappen were the top three. And then Mick Schumacher had a crash in his Haas. The safety car came out and the Mercedes decided to double stack. Whilst doing that, Bottas slowed down on track to try and give more space to Hamilton, which already got up Max and Red Bull's nose. And then the red flag is dropped, so Mick's car can be taken away easier and the barrier is repaired. So if both Mercedes pitted under the safety car and Red Bull didn't, and so Verstappen was leading the race, and then when the red flag was dropped, Verstappen obviously had a free pit stop, which then really upset Mercedes and Hamilton. Now, a lot has been said about the red flag rules. It also cost Lando Norris in the McLaren, who I think everyone's a pretty big fan of. Now, where do you guys stand? Alex, what are your thoughts on the red flag rules with changing parts under the red flag?
It's a funny one with red flags, because I understand, you know, just basically put it in neutral, so literally anyone could do anything. We've seen that before, Red Bull fixing the whole car under a red under a red flag. You know, so realistically, every team could have done something to the car. At the same time, I understand where Norris was coming from. You know, some teams definitely gain an advantage from it. But I don't know. The red flag. I keep saying red card. I'm not sure why. red flag is one of those that there will be a lot of people with different opinions about it. So you know, on my side, it doesn't really make any difference because it's open to anyone to do anything. So I don't really see why would someone gain an advantage more than others, personally.
What about you, DT? What are your thoughts on it?
I think I sort of look at it from two points of view. So from the point of view of the race itself, the rules are the rules and everybody has the same set of rules. Yes, in this instance, it benefited Red Bull and negatively affected Mercedes. But ultimately, they had the same opportunity. And they had the same gamble to make. So I have no issue with the way that it played out because everybody's on a level playing field on that front. And I think it was a brave but ultimately fruitful gamble for Red Bull. But I think fundamentally, if I look at it from the bigger picture, I don't necessarily agree with the fact that you get to change tyres, get a free pit stop whilst the race is stopped. Because in my mind, when the red flag comes out, that is the race paused. And then you should sort out whatever it is you need to sort out. And then the race resumes from where it was before, as close as you can, whichever, whether it be a rolling start or a standing start. But ultimately, the race resumes from the point that you stopped it before, allowing people to change tyres especially artificially modifies the race based on something that they didn't do or didn't plan for. It was someone else's accident or whatever. So I think I would like it personally if the rules were changed going forward, that you know, if your red flag comes out, those tyres that you come in on are the tyres that you go back out on unless they are significantly damaged. But for the sake of the race that we've just had, you know, I have no major issue with the way that it turned out because you roll the dice and you get what you get.
Yeah, totally fair. And in the end, I mean, Mercedes and Hamilton, they weren't very happy about it. At the restart, I mean, Hamilton nailed the restart. He took the lead. He was well ahead. And then drama. This is where it starts. So Verstappen kind of threw one down the inside, was it, I think? He basically he had a bit of a dive and he ended up with that not making the corner and running wide, taking Hamilton with him. In the meantime, Esteban Ocon, who suddenly saw the whole track open up in front of him, came through to take position. But then Verstappen cutting the corner then got ahead of everyone again. So ended up still in the lead with Hamilton back in third with Ocon getting him for second. And then we had absolute carnage further down the field as Perez and Leclerc got together. And then there was the horrible crash that we mentioned from Mazepin. And then politics. So before we get too far into the politics, we've got to go through Verstappen Hamilton restart number one. Was Verstappen going to make the corner, and did he actually have a chance of taking first position back?
You go with that, DT.
So I think this is another example of the way that Verstappen drives and his approach to things. He is quite happy to make a move that isn't going to work in a traditional sense. You know, he's quite happy to put his car in a position that basically means that he's not going to make the corner, but he's going to get, you know, he's going to get track position effectively. I don't like that. It's not, you know, I like the way that Hamilton overtakes. You know, he hunts someone down, he picks his place, and then he executes it beautifully. You know, occasionally he does have these lunges and stuff, and he's aggressive, but more often than not, he's more of a you know, track you down and assassinate you kind of driver kind of thing. Whereas I think this approach by Verstappen that we've seen on quite a few occasions this year, it shows that he's quite happy to try things at any cost. And I don't think that there was any chance that he was going to make that corner based on the manoeuvre that he did. You know, it was worth a go, but ultimately he deserved the penalty that he got because, you know, he didn't make the corner and he forced the driver off the track. So, yeah, I think it was a... I can understand why he made it, but also it's not my style of racing that I like to watch.
Yeah. What about you, Alex? Do you think Verstappen ever had a chance of making the corner?
Not, but I see what Verstappen does. So Verstappen, what he does, the way that obviously you did as well said, he is happy for him to put a car there, even if he does know that he's not going to make the corner. So for me, that is a classic example as in football. Like when the defender comes to you, he knows that he's not going to get the ball or get you either, but he's still disturbing you. So I think he's happy to put a car there, disturbing what Hamilton or whoever is there is doing, and then hopefully he slows him down. So, and that is the same with when they both went out later on in the race. To me, that is exactly the same episode, just they actually, you know, both went out. He's an aggressive driver. Now let me put this clear. I don't support it at all. I don't like Hamilton for different reasons. I don't like Verstappen for different reasons. I'm happy though that there is fight, because I think that Formula One was dying off a little bit without this kind of fight. But there are limits potentially of how you fight someone.
Yeah.
So definitely, yeah.
Yeah, and I think there's a big difference to someone like Verstappen and Danny Ric. Now, Danny Ric is I choose because he said it before, lick it and send. He'll put his car where someone doesn't want it. He'll take a lunge and it will pay off. And okay, sometimes there might be a bit of contact, but more often than not, he's nailed it and it's kind of become one of his traits. Whereas Verstappen, it always seems, I'm going to put my car here, I'm going to go off, and if you try and stay, you know, and if you don't go off the track, you're coming with me, basically.
Yeah, he's basically expecting other people to give him space where he shouldn't have in the first place, basically, yeah.
Mm. And
yeah, I think Ricardo is a good example because, like you say, he does these amazing lunges, but he makes the corner more often than not. You know, he will put his car in a weird position and he might be, you know, he might block the corner a little bit and be slow, but that's racing. Whereas, like, I feel like Verstappen is quite happy just to send it with absolutely no hope of actually making the corner in a traditional sense. And basically forcing someone either to have a crash or to drive off the track. And we've seen it multiple occasions this year. And I think the style that Danny Ric shows is more admirable, I think, overall, than the way that Verstappen does it. And the thing that annoys me is Verstappen can do it that way, because we know he can. He's got the skill. It's a mentality thing. It's not a skill thing. So,
I think... Sorry, go ahead.
Imagine put Ricciardo style of overtakes or sending it into Verstappen mind. He would have won the championship already. I can tell you that.
Yeah, you're probably not wrong.
Yeah. And I think with Verstappen, the way it's going right now, it kind of comes across as almost desperation that he knows he's in a fight. And he has to do something. But this is where, I mean, the stewards obviously saw it the same way as kind of we did. The race director, Michael Massey, got involved. And he made an offer to Red Bull and said, okay, my offer is you will start third with Ocon first, Hamilton second. Basically saying to Red Bull, you forced a driver off track, you have to give up position. That's what you'd normally do. You know, you run off track, you overtake someone, you give it back on track. But because Ocon was there, it was complicated, and obviously it all happened. The race restart then happens, and Verstappen from third aces that one, and he leads. But going back to Michael Massey's offer, now, we were talking on the podcast group, it seemed very weird to me that he was the one offering, and it didn't go to the stewards. Phil kind of said it makes sense, get it sorted before the restart and save the stewards having to go through an investigation, which can take time. And then half the time the stewards say, yeah, we'll investigate after the race. But I was looking on Twitter and there was a few people talking about it. Gary Anderson, who of course a lot of people know, he tweeted and said, who knows what is going on? It shouldn't be about doing deals between the FIA and the team. It should be about implementation of the written rules. And Max Chilton, former F1 driver, he said, since when does the team and the race director do offers on penalties? I don't get pulled over by the police and say, let me have a think about that offer of a speeding fine.
Yeah. That is, again, going back to the past few races where we've said, you know, the FIA completely lost and now they just opened the door for more mess. I was reading earlier. Michael Masi was defending himself, saying, "Oh, this kind of communication happened every time between teams and us." But that was just an offer. It was like, "Yeah, you know, get this because otherwise I go to the stewards. You get even worse. You know, just go to the stewards. If it is something wrong, he's gonna get penalized for it." You know, and there are obviously, I'm the first one to say there should be limits where someone should get penalized, because otherwise it becomes like as Verstappen says. It becomes more about penalties than actually racing. But, you know, this should be like, he did wrong, just follow the rules, he gets penalised.
Yeah, I totally agree. And of course, at the restart, I kind of mentioned he took the lead. In the end, Hamilton got past Ocon, and it was race on. We had Verstappen in the lead, Hamilton second. Forget about everything that's gone before. You're thinking, great, we've actually got a race on our hands this time. And it all kicked off again. So under DRS, Hamilton overtook Verstappen into turn one. But then Verstappen kind of, again, wasn't going to make the corner, loses the car and cuts the corner again, pushing Hamilton wide in the process and regains position. Then Red Bull come on the radio and tell Verstappen to give the position back strategically. And then we get into this whole huge mess about a brake check as the two come together. Now, this was again, arguably, I think, caused by Michael Masi, because apparently he told Red Bull to give the position back, and then he told Mercedes. But while he was telling Mercedes, the incident then happened with Verstappen slowing down. It's all very strange, pretty mad. I mean, DT, what were your thoughts on it?
Well, my immediate thought is that surely they should tell the team that are going to get the place back first.
Yes.
That just seems logical.
Yeah, that's exactly what I said.
And then tell Red Bull that they have to give the place back. So tell Mercedes, we're going to tell Red Bull to give you the place back, and then tell Red Bull. Because it just makes sense that the person who has to be ready for it to happen should be the person who should be aware first. Unless there is a way for, you know, Michael Massey's like assistant or someone who, you know, is number two or whatever, to tell each team at the same time. But it should not be that the Red Bull are told to give the place back and then they tell Mercedes, because there's going to be a delay. And of course, you know, it is a bit of a silly accident, and I can understand why Hamilton was holding back, and it's obvious now from the report that we've had from the stewards that not only did Verstappen slow down aggressively, but he then did apply the brake. Was it 2.4 G's of deceleration from braking, which was the significant thing that caused the accident. But that aside, you know, the whole thing was a bit of a cluster from the FIA side of things.
Yeah,
but during the race, we've seen obviously Mercedes kind of arguing with Michael Masi about that situation, and I'm not sure if it's just me understanding that the way I understood it potentially wrong. That Michael Masi said, I did tell you, if you were speaking to someone else and did not listen, then it's your problem, basically. So I kind of understood it that way, that he did say to them, but then they probably were communicating with internal members and that communication went past them.
It's not that he didn't tell them, it's the way that he told them.
Okay.
So he told Red Bull first, Red Bull were able to then tell their driver almost, you know, quicker. And whilst Red Bull were telling their driver to do it, he was then telling, Massey was telling Mercedes that they're going to give the place back, which is going to be a delay. So it's just that they were just completely the wrong way round, because it meant that obviously Red Bull were ahead of the game in terms of preparing, and they chose to deal with it immediately, not, you know, later in the lap. So if they'd have, it wasn't that they didn't communicate, it was the fact that they just communicated poorly in the order that they communicated with the teams.
Yeah, it was very strange, the whole situation. And the thing that stood out for me was the Red Bull team telling Max to do it strategically. They're literally telling him to use all the tricks in the book. And if you're being told to give up position, it shouldn't be about, oh, give it up strategically. Just bloody give it up. If you're told you have to let someone through, you let them through. It doesn't matter where on track you are. You let them through. It just seemed mad to me. That they were trying, you know, I understand the reasons why they were trying it, but my gosh, it was just, yeah, I didn't quite like the way they were trying to do it.
I don't have any issue with that personally, because I think, you know, ultimately F1 is about strategy, and it's strategy all across the weekend at every level of the race and everything else. So telling him to do it strategically, I mean, of course, he's a driver. He's going to want to do it strategically. He doesn't need to be told that. But they're just reiterating, you know, give him the place back in a place that works better for us, that where so we either don't lose as much time, or we are able to get him back at a later stage. Now, I have no issue with that, because that's part of the gamesmanship of Formula One. And people have done that for donkey's years. So I have no great issue with that. I think that's absolutely fine. I think it's all part and parcel of the sort of legitimate gamesmanship of Formula One. I think the whole cock up is highlights an issue with the way that the race director and the FIA communicate with the teams when we have these sorts of issues.
No, I do agree with that. Now, of course, that collision was something that was then being investigated, and the stewards were going to look at that after the race. We then had the race continue. Verstappen from then didn't want to let Hamilton through. He then did let him through, but overtook immediately, and then he still didn't let him through. So the FIA said, okay, you haven't let him pass, that's a 5-second penalty. So that was penalty number 2 for the day. And then in the end, Hamilton, with a damaged front wing, we should mention as well, eventually caught up Verstappen, overtook him, and in the end kind of ran away with the win. After the race, the stewards investigated and gave a third penalty to Verstappen for the brake check. Like you said, DT, it was 2.4G of braking, which is a lot of braking, to be honest. And that gave, yeah, the stewards found Verstappen predominantly at fault, and they gave him a 10-second time penalty. So he kept second place in the race, but he was penalised for it. Now, that's 3 penalties in one race. I did some research, and that is the joint most. That is equal with Pastor Maldonado from the 2015 Hungarian Grand Prix, which says something.
Maldonado, friend of the pod.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, our own Ped. I'm sure he'd be having some words right now if he was here.
Ped, number one Maldonado fan.
I think that's a fact, isn't it?
I think that's a fact. I think he said it multiple times. Yeah.
But both of you guys, I mean, I want to get your thoughts. Now, the stewards, predominantly at fault, they gave Verstappen the penalty. I think they gave him a penalty that wouldn't ruin the finale, because the way they finished, it meant that there is a 0-point gap going into the last race, which ultimately the FIA want. Do you agree with the penalty for Verstappen? Would you have been more severe, or would you have been more lenient? What are your thoughts, Alex?
I don't like penalties after the race to start with, but the 5 seconds to me was like, you either ask them to give the position back, which, in my opinion, he did. In my opinion, he did the position back. he just did it in a smart way, which, you know, you can't really blame him for it. Then I don't know, it just seems too much to me, really. Even the braking to me, I was reading the FIA and after the race, when they decided that they get to give him a 10-second penalty, he did a 69 psi brake, which is a 2.4 g deceleration, but he started braking a lot earlier. Why did not Hamilton just overtook him? He said he was confused of what, though. There were no yellow flags going around, there was no signal of anything. Why did he not just overtook him?
I think the 2.4 g's was secondary to the initial deceleration, so he decelerated, then he lifted and then he went on the brake again, which at which point Hamilton was right behind him.
Yep, that's the thing. Why, like, he gave Hamilton plenty of space and time to go even on his side. Why did Hamilton have to go behind him, where obviously then Verstappen stamped on the brake, because clearly by those data, that data stamped on the brake.
You're quite right, and I know why Hamilton was there, but I think the reason that they issued the penalty is because Hamilton was right behind him, and then Verstappen chose to heavily brake again with someone directly behind him, and he did not need to apply the brake. What he needs to do is lift and move over.
I agree with that.
He caused the accident, fundamentally.
Yeah, the penalty that they gave him, it was a penalty based on when you slow down too much on track. That is the penalty he got, because he slowed down too much on track when he was actually being asked to give the position, which, if you're leading a race, and in that moment he was going faster than Hamilton, how can you give the place if you're going faster than the one behind you? You got to slow down. If you got to slow down, you got to slow down somehow. And to me, he did plenty of space for him, you know. And obviously, he wanted to do it strategically. You know, he wanted to do it before the DRS, which completely makes sense.
I think, I reiterate again, it's that second phase of the slowing down. It's not the slowing down that was the issue. The reason that he got the penalty is because he aggressively used the brake pedal with Hamilton directly behind him. So he directly, through his actions, was predominantly to cause an accident. It's not 100%, because Hamilton had to be there in order for the accident to happen. So Hamilton has to take some of the blame, but Verstappen has the lion's share of that blame, because he braked and he did not need to. He would have known Hamilton was behind him. I agree with you over the five second. I'm not convinced that Verstappen deserved that 5 second penalty.
No, well, he would have lost the first place anyway, but it's
of course, second, exactly.
I don't really see how is that normal, the 5 second penalties, to be fair, but
No, it's all good points, and it's something that is very very one side or the other. I put a tweet out on the podcast Twitter yesterday, retweeting the stewards' decision and everything, asking people for their opinions. Sam Todd, who is one of the podcast regulars and often gets involved with the chat, this was around the 10-second penalty for Verstappen after the race. Sam said, "I think that decision is crazy. I thought Lewis deserved 10 seconds for that." Now, I can see why some people would say to go blame Hamilton, some people would blame Verstappen. It's very one side or the other, isn't it? And also Simon Partridge, he got in touch as well. And just talking about the race overall, he said, "A mess of a race. There are flashes of what might have been at times, but the flow was rightfully interrupted by virtual safety cars and safety cars. Driving standards at the front and race, race, quote, not in control, were farcical." I like that. That's a good one. "A memorable race, but far from a good one."
Yeah, I agree with that.
Yeah,
and I got a point to raise on safety car and red flag, going back to what we were speaking earlier, but I'll do it just after this point you're making.
No, I was just going to say, I think that totally wraps it up, and the race was a lot of the decisions that we had all weekend. It just seems that the race could have been, it could have come across as less political and kind of less one-sided. I mean, Hamilton fans complaining about things, Verstappen fans complaining about things. Neither fans are happy with the penalties given, for one reason or another. And all because race control stepped in, were getting almost too involved with the race, it seemed.
Yeah.
But yeah, Alex, go ahead. You were talking about the safety cars and red flags.
Yeah,
and,
I was it's just something I put in my notes. I was like, obviously the first, I think it's the first safety car one that Mick Schumacher, when he crashed, there was a 6 laps under a safety car, and then they put a red flag out. Why, obviously, and I know this is in the rules, that's why they do the restarts like that. Why, if we give a safety car first, then obviously you put a red flag out to stop the cars going around, which is, you know, for safety, which I completely fully understand that. But why don't you go back to a rolling start as you normally do under the safety car rules? Because to me, if you do that, you either put a red flag out straight away, which in the, on that track, to me, there was no point of having a safety car, because if there is an accident, it's always going to be, you know, on the track. Obviously, we know that there are no, you know, runoff areas. So you either put a red flag straight away and then you restart with a standing start, or if you put a safety car out and then a red flag it, then you got to restart on the safety car, to me. And you know, just as a normal safety car restart, so rolling start. That to me would bring also the show up a little bit more, instead of just restarting, and because then you end up having Hulkon that he was in first position in the second one under a normal rolling restart. It could have been different than actually a starting, because you could have kept the lead. You know, you give the extra bit of show that at the end of the day, Formula One now is becoming a business about show. It's not just racing anymore, unfortunately. It's got, you know, it's a business model about bringing people in to watch the show.
Yeah, and I think it was a very strange one. I mean, the second red flag as well, you know, we had a restart. There's a massive crash at the restart with Perez, Leclerc, and obviously Mazepin, and I think it was Russell who all had a big crash. You see how dangerous the circuit is on the restart. So they red flag it again and have another standing start. That second one, I was just like, it's going to be dangerous doing another standing start. Yeah. Just do a rolling restart for this one, just out of the element of safety. But they still, you know, they stuck to what is written in the rules and did a standing start.
Yeah, this was my point, really. I mean...
Yeah, I mean, I agree with Alex, and it goes back to my point earlier on. It's like, if there's a red flag, surely the race pauses at that point, and then it restarts from where we were before. So if we were under safety car and we were following the safety car, then surely we just go back to following the safety car and then carry on. So yeah, I agree.
Yeah, very strange decisions. But one final point I want to quickly mention. Simple yes or no answer will do for this as well. Most pundits have come out following Hamilton's statements that he said in interviews after the race. And most pundits have agreed with them and saying that Verstappen crossed the line with his driving standards during the race. Do you guys agree that he crossed the line, or do you think he was just about on it?
I would say on it. I've seen worse. He was just pure fighting. You cross the line. It just the consequence of it.
Yeah. DT, what are your thoughts?
I think I don't like the way that he drives, but I don't see him doing anything worse than Schumacher did. Schumacher is celebrated.
Yeah. And I'll tell you something on that to kind of wrap it up. This was a quote from my dad, and he said, at least when Schumacher tried to hit someone off, he hit them off properly. So we've
love your dad.
I mean, that from a Damon fan as well, so you know, we all know what happened there, but that's written down. I have to mention Damon at least once in every podcast. I'm sorry. Awesome. Yeah. Well,
Horner's best friend, Damon Hill. There is certainly no love lost between them, is there?
No, not at all. Awesome. Right. Well, everyone listening, do let us know your thoughts and opinions on the whole of the Saudi Arabian race. Plenty of ways to get in touch with us. Patreon. We're not going to have a Patreon pod this week, unfortunately, because we've gone on so long and with so many things to talk about. But do go check Patreon out. We will have plenty more content on there coming up. Patreon.com/NRF1. That's patreon.com/NRF1. Social media, get in touch with us there. Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. The handle for all three is @TheNRF1. And you can email us as well. That address is nrf1podcast@gmail.com. Okay, moving on. We need to have a quick, and this is going to be properly quick, I think, run over of Abu Dhabi. It's the finale. It's going to be interesting. There's some changes to the track in Abu Dhabi. I think it's about time they changed it a bit to try and, you know, do something different. Do you think they'll make a big difference in terms of on-track action, or do you think it's going to be much the same and it could be kind of a bit of an anticlimax? What do you think, DT?
I don't think it will be an anticlimax so much, because ultimately it's the last race and they're level on points. So I think even if one of the other just goes off into the distance, I still think it will be an interesting and sort of good end to the season in a way. But I see some fireworks coming, because Lewis and Max, more often than not, are there or thereabouts with each other on pace, and no one else can quite touch them. They're in a different league. So they're going to be on track together at the same time at some point, I reckon. So I'm not entirely sure how that's going to play out. It's going to be interesting to watch. I think based on this weekend, I think it could potentially lead to some serious fireworks.
Yeah, more than just at the end of the race. Alex, what about you? Do you think the circuit changes will make a big difference?
I hope so.
I think we all hope.
But the more important for me is that I hope as well that nothing else happened that it shouldn't. Let's put it that way. The more than actually the track difference in between the two lads. Let's put it that way.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, hopefully it's a good race, because at the end of the day, it's a new track for everyone in there, you know. Yeah, let's leave it like that. Hopefully it's a good race.
Yeah, definitely. And guys, I think this could well be a one-word answer as well, but there's 0 points in it. Verstappen currently is leading the championship in terms of race wins across the season. But who do you think? There can only be one winner. Who do you think will go on to win it? Who would you say, Alex?
I hate myself for saying this, but Hamilton.
DT, who do you think?
I think Hamilton. Wow. He's got the momentum. He's got the bit between his teeth, and he is driving with a mission, but doing it well. And I think Verstappen in the last few races has looked a bit more scrappy. And I think that the winner, I think Hamilton's got the right approach and mentality to bring it over the line, providing the car is quick enough.
Yeah. I think that Verstappen even worries too much and talks too much even before the race has started. He doesn't have the mindset yet. He's not there mentally, where Lewis knows already how this, you know, he won a championship in Brazil at the time, you know, at the last two turns. So you know how this can go and how to deal with it, but Max doesn't.
Yeah.
Well, I think there's going to be a blinding race. Let's hope it's a good one. Let's hope it's a clean one, and let's hope politics don't spoil it. We will be back though, with E289, which will be our review of the Abu Dhabi Grand Prix. And I think we'll probably try and work that in with like a bit of a Christmas party. We'll probably do it online so it's all socially distanced and make sure everyone's safe for Christmas. But Alex, DT, any final things you want to add on?
Sky Sports should add a button to mute Christian Horner.
I would pay an extra fiver for that button.
I would easily tenner. I would put a tenner in for that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nice.
Yeah. The other thing I was going to say is that I'm weirdly enjoying Hamilton and Bottas's bromance the last few races.
Oh yeah, yeah. That's been something that's blossomed, actually, hasn't it? So
And I can understand why Hamilton's doing it. You know, he's not stupid. You know, he will want Bottas on his side, and he's obviously going to say nice things about him anyway. But I do think he means it as well. So yeah, they obviously seem to get on well, far better than I think he's got on with any other teammate. So
yeah, definitely brilliant. Well, I think that brings us to the end. So yeah, it's on as even as we head into the finale. Let's hope it's a good one. I'm sure it will be. I'm excited already. But Alex, DT, thanks both for joining me tonight. It's good to have you both back on the pod.
Pleasure.
Thank you too.
And I'll get something sent out next week, and we'll get a pre-Christmas pod to wrap it all up, I think. But yeah, this has been the NRF1 podcast. Thank you all for joining us. We will see you next time. Good night.